Darkness had set in by the time Kareem drove the Cadillac off the blacktop onto a sandy trail winding back into the Palms and Pines mobile home park. He followed the worn, potholed path back through acres of overgrowth and blackened trailers. At the rear of the nearly abandoned community, he pulled into a weed-choked parking place alongside an ancient airstream. The trailer sat on cinder blocks, thickly surrounded by cabbage palms and unkempt saw palmetto. A pair of red eyes glinted in the headlight beam and darted away into the surrounding bracken and marshlands.
Man, this is some sorry shit right here.
Kareem looked all around the place.
I told you it was just until I scored this cash.
The briefcase lay against Augeo's left leg.
5 minutes, we're out of here.
He swung open the door, took a last draw on a cigarette, and flipped the butt away.
I'll grab my stuff.
He picked up the briefcase and stood up out of the car. Kareem watched him walk to the front door of the trailer through a circle of yellowy security light. Above, a thick swarm of insects circled the dim light, their shadows spinning on the windshield, the wide car hood.
So, here we are.
He reached around and retrieved a 12-pack sitting in the back floor beside a bottle of scotch they'd picked up over on Commercial Way coming here. Kareem sat the pack on the seat beside him, pulled out a cold, sweaty can, opened it, and took a long drink. He settled back, watching the trailer. A light clicked on inside. All right. He sank back into the leather seat and leaned his head back and relaxed. Kareem straightened upright to find a man holding a short rifle pointed at his face through the glass.
Damn.
Out of the car!
The man opened the unlocked door halfway.
Keep your hands in sight!
Damn. Kareem held his hands in sight, turning slowly, holding his can of beer.
A robbery, huh?
He stepped up out of the Cadillac, looked at the short rifle.
Shut up! Get going inside!
The man gestured toward the trailer with the short rifle barrel. Kareem looked the man up and down and headed for a rickety porch leaning against the front of the trailer.
Who are you? Lucas McCain, the rifleman?
That's funny, Shine. Start running your mouth, I'll cap you right here.
Even with the tough talk, Kareem thought the man sounded a little jittery. Shine. When he stepped inside the trailer, the man with the rifle right behind him, he saw Augeo standing in a small, dirty kitchen area. A man stood in front of Augeo with a small caliber pistol in hand, a silencer attached to its barrel by a wrapping of silver duct tape.
Over there!
The man with the rifle gave Kareem a nudge with the gun barrel, ushering him toward the kitchen area. Kareem walked forward, eyeing the briefcase of cash lying open on a battered table with rusty chrome legs. The man holding the silenced pistol looked at them, then back at Augeo. He reached out and closed the briefcase.
We're taking this for our trouble.
He wore his long, greasy hair pulled back, tied into a short tail hanging down the back of his neck. Kareem crossed the dirty floor and stood beside Augeo. The man with the pistol looked him up and down and addressed his cohort holding the short rifle.
You checked the car out?
No, not yet. I figured I'd get him in here first.
There's nothing in the car.
And we'll take it apart and see.
Hey, that's my car. You don't want to be taking it apart. You think there's something in it, we check it out together.
Shut up. If he says anything else, crack his head.
You got it. This one's a wise ass anyway.
He held the rifle more intently toward Kareem with both hands.
I will.
Easy, Kay. They're not fooling around.
He raised his hands a little. His eyes were equally red and dilated from the coke they'd snorted throughout the day.
That's right. We're not fooling around. Give us the 5 keys of blowback and we're out of here.
What are you talking about?
Shut up, Kay. I mean it.
What? You think Marty wouldn't send us out to kill you for 5 keys of blow?
He wagged his pistol at Kareem.
The spade, too, for that matter?
Whoa, what's all this name calling? That's some racial shit.
Nah, crack him.
The man drew his rifle back for a swipe at Kareem's head, but stopped short when Kareem didn't flinch, just stood, glaring at him.
What about I just shoot him if he won't shut up, sonny?
The man eased the rifle back down in front of him.
All right, shoot him then.
Kareem looked all around the small kitchen area, getting the lay of the place. The man with the rifle stayed tensed, rifle aimed and ready.
Now where's our blow, Augie?
It was stolen, sonny. You were there same as I was. They stole your dope when they stole my money. We both lost out.
I don't think so. I think you had some Tampa boys bust in and do it. You thought Marty A.M. would fall for that old hustle?
You're wrong, sonny. I had nothing to do with it.
I'm not wrong. Now give it up. It's the last time I'm telling you.
Marty A.M. Short for Marty Ambrose, Kareem remembered. Kareem raised one finger, and Sonny turned his eyes away.
What?
Kareem made a show of slowly reaching into his loose trouser pocket and raising the rolled-up bag that had started out at daylight as a quarter kilo of cocaine before he and Augeo ran lines from it all day. Kareem reached over and plopped the bag onto the kitchen table, then stared at Sonny, who gave the man holding the rifle a look.
You didn't search him out there? I told you to search him.
Yeah, you told me to, but I didn't. Want me to search him now?
Why search him now? All right, talk.
The man holding the pointed rifle stood at ease, but kept his hands poised on the grip and front stock.
That's a quarter note we've been hitting on. Is that the blow you cowpokes looking for?
Sonny stepped in, turned the plastic bag over, and looked at an identifying blue line along the zip-top bag.
That's the dope. Street cut and ready for the market.
He pulled the bag open and stuck a long pinky nail inside it. Twice.
Oh, yeah.
He sucked his fingertip clean and wiped his nose between his thumb and fingers. His eyes misted and widened.
There's one bag. Where's the rest?
Augie looked a little worried.
Okay, this bag come from the product before they all got stolen. I palmed it up under my shirt when they came busting in to rob us. Think about it. How many quarter bags did you see the thieves grab?
He shrugged.
I didn't count.
What? You're the big dope runner. You don't even know how many bags of blow they was robbing from you?
It don't really matter now. I'm gonna shoot you both anyway.
It does matter. You going back to Marty Ambrose and give him this weak-ass, half-gone bag of blow, tell him that's all you got back?
Hearing the name Marty Ambrose gave Sonny tense pause for a moment. Then he collected himself.
I never said Marty Ambrose. I just said Marty A.M.
Oh, my bad. How many Marty A.M.s you think there are running dope all up this coastline?
You're a wise ass.
Jesus, Kay. Why'd you pull that bag out?
Because I'm supposed to have your back. He was gonna shoot you.
Oh, you mean like he's getting ready to do now?
Dope runners don't act like this.
Both of you shut the fuck up!
Sonny wagged the gun at a chair.
You! Sit down!
The man with the rifle watched, ready for anything.
All right, I'm down.
Kareem sat his beer down and raked out a chair with his foot. He turned the chair facing the man with the pointed rifle, but instead of sitting down, he swiped an iron skillet from the stove and swung it into DeCampo's forehead. The rifle flew from the man's hands. His eyes rolled upward. With another solid swing, Kareem laid the hard, round edge of it into the pubic arch mantling the man's crotch, jackknifing him at the waist. His body slammed down onto the table, causing one of the chrome legs to buckle under. Both man and table crashed to the floor. The man lay limp, face down, an ashtray of cigarette butts, the 12-pack, and the bag of dope all gathered around his shoulders.
Fucked him up.
Kareem made a grab for the .22 pistol from Sonny's hand and held it out at him, ready to fire.
Now you're dead, Sonny.
Oh!
5 feet away, Sonny grasped his chest.
Wait!
But Augie squeezed the trigger 4 more times. The second shot sent both the silencer and scraps of duct tape flying in the air, and a small hot bullet into Sonny's upraised palm smoking. Sonny flapped his hand wildly. The third shot. Sonny twisted and fell backwards, both hands digging at his ribs. A fourth pull on the trigger.
What the hell?
Augie shook the gun and tried to fire again. The gun wouldn't work for him. Sonny lay on the floor, writhing in pain.
Forget that gun. You gotta stick it against his head to kill him.
Kareem moved in, tossing the skillet down onto a chair. He picked up the short rifle, while Augie still tried to shake the small pistol's problems away. Augie finally tossed the gun aside. He kicked the silencer and a wad of smoking duct tape across the trailer floor.
Give me the rifle, Kay. I'll finish him off.
Don't shoot me again, Augie, please.
Sonny pushed himself onto his knees.
Fuck you, Sonny. You're dead. Give me the rifle, Kay.
Wait a minute. Don't you want to ask him something first?
Ask him what?
Augie's red eyes followed Kareem to the floor as Kareem bent down and picked up the bag of blow in the 12-pack. The knocked-out gunman tried to lift his head but couldn't do it. Kareem looked at the swelling purple forehead turned toward him, then stood and laid the 12-pack and dope atop the stove.
I was you. I'd ask him how he knows about the missing product being cut, ready for the street, like he said.
Kareem gave Augie a curious look.
How long you been moving product?
Long enough. Now give me the rifle.
Hold on, my man. I want to know even if you don't. We've been hitting this blow all day. If it was pure high grade, it would have torn our heads off.
Augie stared at him, considering it.
Yes, Sonny. How did you know the dope was already stepped on, ready to sell?
Sonny held his bloody hands chest high.
Hey, come on, man. I didn't know. I just said it, that's all.
Kareem leveled the short rifle at Sonny's bloody chest.
We're not going to ask again. I'm going to count to one, then I'm going to start popping caps.
He gave him a flat smile and laid his big finger over the trigger.
You ready? Let's go then.
Wait, please, hold it. I laid all out for you. Everything, okay?
We're listening.
Kareem stepped in, the rifle hanging in his hand. The four sat in rusted, chrome-backed kitchen chairs around the wobbly table that Sonny French and Aaron Augio had propped back up onto its straightened leg. The gunman, Hal DeCampo, whom Kareem had nailed with the iron skillet, had regained consciousness. He sat with a tall can of cold beer against his forehead and a tray of ice from the refrigerator wrapped in a dish towel lying on his sore crotch. His short rifle lay on the table, pointing at him, the rear grip resting near Kareem's right hand. Beside Kareem, Aaron Augio sat with his own pistol out now, lying beside his glass of scotch. Sonny sat beside DeCampo. Both had a can of beer standing in front of them. Sonny held an ice cube wrapped in a paper towel in his wounded palm. He'd stuffed wadded paper towels inside his shirt, against his chest where he'd scraped out a bullet with his fingers, and against his side where a bullet still stuck in his ribs.
And there's the whole story.
He'd finished telling them the history of the open quarter bag of coke laying in the middle of the table.
I set up the deal with you on my own. Marty A.M. doesn't know anything about it.
Let me get this straight. The blow was supposed to go to street dealers.
He looked from Sonny to Kareem, who nodded, listening.
Yeah, it would have played out good, except we got robbed. We figured it was you behind it.
Yeah, well, you were wrong. I lost a buck and a half, money that belongs to some backers of mine. Now I'm on the hook for it. I figured it was you who set up the robbery. I'm still not convinced, but I wasn't sticking around to argue.
His hand crawled over his pistol and laid there.
I've been outscoring cash every way I can to make this thing right with my backers.
It wasn't us, I swear to God.
Augio picked up the pistol and turned it back and forth in his hand.
Okay, let's not start all over here.
Kareem gestured a nod at Augio's gun. Augio laid it down easy, but kept his hand over it.
You cowboys gotta get Marty A.M.'s product back before he misses it. He'll send you on an airboat ride.
Yeah, we know that. What do you think I've been saying here?
Kareem turned to Augio.
How cool are your backers?
How cool do you think? They fronted me $150,000 to score product for them. The money and the dope are both gone. Soon as they find out about it, I'm dead.
Us too. I've seen what Marty A.M. does to people who lose his dope.
Augio just looked at him.
So you were gonna hang it all on me?
Sonny returned his cold stare.
Okay, focus here, both of you. Look, I couldn't see any faces around those scarves and masks, but I know a brother in Tampa, Ybor City. He knows everybody who's into ripping off product. I go to him, he tells me who's got your dope and your money.
He looked at each of them in turn. Sonny and Augio looked at each other again, this time with a little less malice.
Suppose he does know, Kay. How fast can we move on this?
Fast as you want to move, like right now. Soon as I find out who got it, we go get it back. What do you say, cowpokes? You down for it?
DeCampo just sat with his head lowered, the cold can against it.
Why are you doing this?
For 10%, that's why. It ain't social work.
He looked to Augio.
10% of your $150,000.
Then turned to Sonny.
And 10% of the dope's value, which is the same amount, I figure. So, $15,000 each. Take yourselves half a second to think about it. You want to do it, we do it. You don't, I'm done here.
He turned back to Augio.
You still pay me for being your backup.
Yeah, sure, why not? If I don't get straightened out, I'm a dead man. And you won't get anything.
I'll get you straightened out. Florida's my turf. I know every dog on the track. My boys have been scheming, smuggling all up and down these coastlines since Columbus landed in Miami. You'll be all
right.
Check
it out!
DeCampo rose half up from his chair. He stared past Kareem out the front window where flames licked high, raging up from the underbrush.
My car!
Kareem sprang up from the table, grabbing the short rifle.
Let's get out of here.
He waited for no one. Augio grabbed the briefcase, the dope, and a half bottle of scotch. He wagged the other two out with his pistol and ran out behind him. Sonny carried the remainder of the 12-pack in his good hand. The three caught up with Kareem at the open door of the Cadillac. Smoke pressed low and hot all around the car.
Hurry up! Get in!
Kareem started the engine. He pulled the shift lever into drive and stabbed the gas pedal down as Sonny and Augio pulled DeCampo into the back seat and slammed the door behind him. At the blacktop, a fire truck slowed enough to make the turn into the trailer park. The firemen saw the maroon Cadillac fishtail off the sand onto the asphalt and speed away in the darkness.
What the?
Inside the car, Sonny jerked upright when they saw and heard a dazzling ball of fire erupt out of the tree line.
There goes your truck, Cal.
Yeah, Hal, tough break.
Augio sat in the seat beside Kareem, hiked around, loosely keeping his gun on Sonny and DeCampo. Kareem just gave him a look and sped toward the main highway. Ray Dillon knew early on that Sammy Bloom was not a woman to be taken for granted. She was not to be misjudged, misled, or mishandled. And he liked that about her, her classiness. To the outside world, it might appear odd that he saw something bothering her and refused to bring it up. He even found it more suitable to slip around and watch her house like some half a stalker than to confront her with it. But he realized that one sure way to watch Sammy's taillight speed away would be to stick his nose into her personal business uninvited. The two of them were a lot alike in that regard. They were both private people who held their past, as well as their present lives, closely guarded. Dillon was comfortable with that. He liked the cool confidence of privacy, the certainty of it, even though with it at times came a sort of sadness that exacted its own price on the spirit. He accepted that whatever knowledge, wisdom, or certainty of self he might have gleaned in this inimitable profession he'd chosen, it had come to him hard-earned, with a built-in occupational demand for solitude. For reasons he might never know, he sensed the same need in Sammy Bloom, and regardless of those reasons, he was okay with that too. He felt at peace considering this place the two of them had made for each other. He'd smiled to himself as the light changed. They'd spent much of last night making love, sipping wine to soft jazz on the FM station out of Clearwater. In the morning, they had eaten egg beaters with wheat toast and fresh sliced tomatoes out on the lanai while they watched the news. The lead story, a landmark trailer park burning to the ground in a wild brush fire. Dillon had noted a sad downturn in her voice, watching the reporter talk to the owner of the Palms and Pines Mobile Home Park community.
This place was once the pride of the Central Gulf Coast. Now, I just don't know. We got no insurance. We're here with this bad economy.
Sammy had shaken her head, listening. Down.
You think you have everything, and then one day, just like that, it's all gone.
Sammy seemed to Dillon to be troubled by something more than a news story.
Ray, suppose I actually had to shoot someone. Would I only have to shoot them once, or would it take several shots before I stopped them?
It depends on a person's size, body density, factors like that. Also depends on where you shoot him, or how much dope he's on.
She looked at him questioningly.
Well, if it's some heavyweight or some blown-out crackhead, it could take 2, 3, 4 body shots or more before he goes down.
Unless, of course, I hit him in the head.
Yes, but aiming for the head is not always a good idea in a life-or-death situation. Any shooter will tell you, go for the largest target, aim for the body, and start shooting. Hope you hit the heart and lungs.
His expression soured a little.
It's not a pleasant topic, but it's something you should know if you're going to be armed.
Yes, I understand. I asked for it. I brought it up.
Ray Dillon gave his left turn signal and swung off the highway into a gas station. He paid cash inside and went back to the pump and filled his tank. When he'd finished, he slipped back into the driver's seat and eased across the station lot back toward the highway. But instead of emerging out into traffic, he glanced across the wide street and did a quick double take. There, turning out of the traffic, was the maroon Cadillac. He watched it turn off of the highway into a self-service car wash, pulled right inside an empty bay.
All right.
Dillon veered the Buick over off the station's driveway. He grabbed the pair of small binoculars from his console and raised them to his eyes in time to see the black man step out of the Cadillac and look the car over. Tightening the focus in close on the man, then moving down the rear of the car, he saw that the Canadian plates were gone. In their place was a newer-looking plate from the state of Michigan.
Nice try.
Except for the shiny red plate, the rest of the car looked streaked with smoke. Smudges and flecks of soot covered the rear window. From the passenger side, the man with the spiked hair stepped out and straightened. His eyes were hidden behind a pair of sunglasses. His face looked drawn and pale. Dillon saw him adjust the butt of a gun sticking up from his waist behind his shirt. From the back seat, two haggard, blood-stained men climbed out and limped over to a curbing beside a row of commercial auto vacuums. One held a beer can against his forehead. He plopped down and leaned back onto a strip of grass. The one standing peeled off his shirt, wadded it, and tossed it into a trash can. Dillon saw clean white bandages on his side and chest.
What a crew.
He tried to come up with any possible reason why these two had been at Sammy's house, and drew a blank. As the driver behind Dillon expressed their great impatience, heads turned from every direction. Even the black man across the street turned and looked toward the sound. He continued staring long and hard at the Buick as Dillon lowered the binoculars and eased the car forward out onto the street. Dillon drove away in the traffic without looking back to see if he was being watched. At this point, he had to assume he'd been made.
You see that?
Kareem and Augeo stared as the silver-gray Buick sped along the highway.
It's that same car.
I see it. You really think it's the same?
What'd I say? You got heat on you?
Kareem stepped over to a coin machine to make change. At the curbing, Sonny French and Hal DeCampo stood up and walked over closer, listening.
Heat on me? I don't think so, Kay. Only people interested in me are my backers. If that was them, we wouldn't have seen them.
He looked at Sonny and DeCampo.
What about you two?
No, we're cool.
Kareem looked the two up and down.
You think?
Yeah, I think.
Sonny was getting some attitude back now that he'd gotten his shallow wounds bandaged with supplies from a CVS store.
What about you? Maybe there's heat on you.
Yeah, right.
He looked Sonny up and down.
Get you a shirt out the trunk. Can't be walking around Tampa no shirt on, bullet wounds showing.
He pitched the trunk keys to Augeo.
Show him where the stuff's at back there.
The three went through a pile of loose clothes in the trunk while Kareem soaked down the front of the smudged Cadillac and rinsed it off with a high-pressure wand.
Hey, these clothes are all dirty. They stink.
Sonny held up a silky, wrinkled shirt with scenes of parrots drinking margaritas on it.
Look down under the dirty clothes. There's some folded t-shirts there.
Augeo took out the bag of dope and unrolled it under the shelter of the raised trunk lid. As Sonny went deeper through the dirty clothes and pulled up a folded t-shirt, Augeo dipped into the cocaine with a small plastic spoon he found lying among the clothes and debris. He snorted a mound and handed the spoon and bag to DeCampo. Kareem saw what the two were doing as he moved to the driver's side with the wand and rinsed it down. When the car was washed and the four were back inside, a new cold 12-pack of beer sitting on the rear floor, Kareem drove the Cadillac out onto the highway and headed north to Cortez Boulevard. At Cortez, he took a right and drove on, headed east, passing a succession of car dealers, chain restaurants, and strip malls, until he reached the Suncoast Parkway and headed south toward Tampa. He kept a sharp eye on his rearview mirror, yet even so, he failed to see Dylan's silver-gray Buick lagging back, managing to keep a car or truck between them, tailing the Cadillac from a safe distance away. A 45-minute drive later, Kareem guided the big Cadillac down off the Suncoast onto the steamy asphalt tentacles of the city where streets narrowed between rows of boarded-up buildings and weedy lots. Off the main street of Tampa's old cigar-producing section, Ybor City, he pulled the car into a narrow one-way brick alley and parked.
Everybody hang here.
I should go with you. What if there's trouble?
If you go with me, there will be.
Kareem stood up from the driver's seat in the open door and adjusted his 10mm into the waist of his loose-fitting trousers. The three watched as he closed the door, looked all around, and walked across an ancient sidewalk into a door with a sign that read, Cano Randley Imports, Inc.
This is not cool. We should both be with him. How do we know what he's doing in there? All of a sudden he's in charge?
Chill. We agreed for him to do this for us.
Did you just tell me to chill?
Augeo reached around between the front seats and pitched the rolled-up bag of dope onto Sonny's lap. The three bowed over the white powder as if gathering in prayer. Ray Dillon had parked his Buick out on the street. Wearing dark shades and a straw Panama he'd taken from the trunk, he moved into the alley on foot and slowed to a halt when he spotted the three men waiting in the Cadillac. He browsed the renovated buildings like a tourist, yet he was familiar with this area. By people in his circle, the alley was called Smuggler's Roost or Contraband Cove. Many of the chic storefronts lining the narrow alley were thin facades for illegal drug and gun-running operations.
Jesus, Sammy.
The deeper he probed, the less he liked his findings. By the time Kareem came back to the car 15 minutes later, Dylan had retreated from the alleyway and walked back to where he'd parked his Buick. Circling the block, he'd parked in front of a wide delivery truck, 20 yards from where the one-way alley emptied back onto a through street. Unseen from either the alley or the traffic coming up behind them, he took off the straw Panama and dropped it onto the passenger seat beside him. They had to come this way.
What'd you find out?
Plenty. Put the blow away.
Sonny looked back as the Cadillac traveled in reverse.
What are you doing?
I'm backing us out of here.
Beside Kareem, Augeo grabbed the bag of dope, closed it, and put it away.
Why?
Kareem backed out and around onto the street. He gave a sly little grin into the rearview mirror.
Because sometimes it's good to do what nobody expects. That's why.
He ran his hand inside his shirt.
Here, my friend said Merry Christmas.
He tossed a rolled bag of reefer onto Augeo's lap. Sonny and DeCampo craned forward for a look.
Cool.
Augeo hefted the bag on his palm. He eyed a pack of zigzag papers rolled up into the bag.
Yeah, cool, but what about our dope and the money?
Sonny caught the bag of reefer Augeo pitched to him.
I got good news and bad.
Kareem drove to the corner and took a left.
I found out who ripped you off. It's three gangsters working on their own. Nobody protecting them. I even know the place that they're laid up.
At the next corner, he took another left. Cruised right past the Buick, didn't notice it.
Good news is they know me. They'll let me in when I come to deal.
Good. I say let's go nail them.
Sonny handed the bag to DeCampo, who opened it, and took out the pack of papers.
Bad news is, once I do this, they'll be after me from now on.
What about masks?
Listen to you.
Kareem glared at Sonny in the rearview.
How are we gonna get through the door wearing masks? After you get your money and Marty AM's product back, you're gone. I'll be watching my back for these Tampa boys from now on.
So what are you saying? We agreed on your cut.
I get more for going in. Call it a bonus.
He rubbed his thumb and fingertip together in the sign for greed.
No way! We made the deal. You agreed to 15%.
5,000 bonus from each of us when we're done. Where are they, and when are we doing this?
We do it as soon as I pick us up an AK from a friend and we get ourselves a job car. The Rippers are moving product out of a motel room over in Hudson Beach.
You mean today? Right now?
Sonny held the joint Hal had just rolled and handed to him.
We don't get there soon, your dope will be all gone. Then you'll be paying Marty M for his dope at street price.
Sonny nodded and stuck the joint up behind his ear.
Take us to a mall. Hal will get us a car.
Instead of the Cadillac coming out of the alley onto the through street, Ray Dillon saw it drive past him where he sat watching for it from the cover of the delivery truck. As soon as he saw it, he started the Buick and moved out into the afternoon traffic, keeping the big Cadillac in sight from a safe distance back. It had been a long time since he'd tailed a car on busy city streets. Luckily, he hadn't lost his touch. At the end of a short drive through a trashed-out area of Tampa's downtown perimeter, he watched the car pull over and park in a rundown rental complex where a half-hairless dog stood licking at something on the edge of the sidewalk. Easing the Buick over to a curb a quarter of a block back, Dillon watched as the big man left the caddy and walked into a ground floor unit. While he sat watching it, he reminded himself that he'd been tailing these four most of the afternoon. But that was okay. He'd wanted to find out more about them. He was certainly doing that. Watching this crew was like witnessing an oncoming crash. He could see it coming. He couldn't stop it, yet he couldn't turn his eyes away. He'd seen enough, but there seemed to be no good place for him to break it off and go home. As he considered how he was going to approach Sammy with all this, he saw the black man come out of the apartment door and walk back to the trunk of the car carrying a beach towel wrapped around what had to be a firearm. Dillon watched him open the trunk, deposit the wrapped item, and close the lid behind it. In a moment, the man was back in the driver's seat. He started the caddy and swung out onto the street. Dillon gave the caddy some leadway, then swung back out behind it. They were getting ready for something, no doubt about it. He followed and watched. As he drove, he fished a hand over into the console and found a well-seasoned, unopened granola snack bar. Wasting no time, he opened it with one hand and his teeth and devoured it. He washed the dry granola down with tepid coffee from a McDonald's cup that had sat in the drink holder all day. He wasn't about to stop now. A grainy darkness had set in when the caddy pulled off the highway again and prowled the outer edges of a sprawling mall parking lot. Dillon nosed the Buick into a herringbone parking space and watched the Cadillac stop long enough to let one of the men step out from the back seat. The man looked back and forth without raising his face and walked away into a line of parked cars.
Okay.
Dillon wasn't surprised a moment later as he watched a charcoal-black Ford Taurus ease out, blink its lights, and follow the Cadillac away.
Line for a penny.
Out of the bug-circled security lights of the Gulf Breeze Motel parking lot, Kareem killed the Taurus's headlights and slowed it to a halt behind the cover of a ligustrum hedge. The four watched a young man wearing dark baggy street clothes walk out the last battered door in a row of neglected units. He climbed into a parked Chevy Trailblazer and drove away. Behind the screen of a half-open window, a pair of drapes parted an inch, then fell back in place. Kareem nodded at the door.
There's your product and your cash. What's left of it?
The lot sat empty, the rooms all dark now except for the one on the end. Kareem looked in the rear view at Sonny and DeCampo through a wafting cloud of reefer smoke.
You cowboys ready to swing up?
Let's do it.
Hal DeCampo turned up the last drink from a can of beer, mashed the can in the middle, folded it double and dropped it on the floor. Sonny stubbed out a joint and dropped the roach in the ashtray. He picked up the AK-47, leaning against the seat beside him. Kareem looked at Augie.
Ready?
Augie nodded and pulled his sunglasses down over his eyes, lest the thieves recognize him as one of the men they'd robbed. He held up a two-tone 9mm Bursa, racked its slide, and shoved the gun down in his waist. He smoothed his shirt down. For extra insurance, he picked up a black beret he'd taken from the trunk of the caddy and adjusted it down onto his forehead.
My man.
Kareem looked over his shoulder to Sonny, who held the AK across his chest.
Hang back until the door opens and make sure we got it blocked.
I know, then we come in fast.
Looking at DeCampo, he reached for the door handle.
Me and Hal's got this.
Kareem started the Taurus as he and Augie watched the two step out of the car and take cover against the tall hedge.
What's to keep us from killing those two punks and keeping the dope and the money?
You want to kill him? You should have said so before I stuck the AK in Sonny's hands.
It's just a thought.
Kareem backed the Taurus, turned it around the end of the tall hedges, and drove into the motel lot right up to the concrete parking bump in front of the door. As the two stepped out, Kareem saw the window drape once again pull back an inch, then fall back in place.
Who the fuck is it, Baker? How the fuck am I supposed to know?
Jamal, it's me. Open up.
Man, shit. He's shouting my name out. Get that fool in here. Shut him up.
The door opened a crack.
Man, what is wrong with you?
A face peered out and looked back and forth warily.
We come to buy some blow, Jamal.
Kareem pushed the door open a little more and made sure he stood blocking it from being closed.
Motherfucker, get my name out your mouth.
A hand wearing a large silver ring pulled the door open more. Kareem stepped inside far enough to keep the door open. He moved a little to the side to allow Augie in beside him.
We're both high here. There's nobody out there listening anyway, Jamal.
The thin black man, Jamal Bachman, shook his head, stepped back, and tugged at a strip of a goatee.
This shit ain't funny, man. Get in here. Shut the door.
Standing off to the side, a stocky young white man named Neil Baker stood holding a sawed-off shotgun. He wore a long shaggy ponytail under a Yankees baseball cap.
Wait a minute.
Kareem blocked the open door.
We got one more coming. His shoe fell off.
Fuck his shoe! Shut the door!
Kareem only looked outside over his shoulder.
Shut the door! Shut the door! Shut the door!
The white man with the Yankees cap looked tensed, getting nervous.
Here he is now.
Kareem moved a step closer to Jamal. Sonny French thundered into the room, the AK at his shoulder, pointed and ready, aimed at the man with the shotgun. Behind Sonny, DeCampo stepped in and moved to the side, the short rifle back in his hands. Kareem snatched up his 10mm and aimed it at Jamal's head. Augie brought up his two-tone Bursa and aimed it at the shotgun wielder.
Drop it, Baker!
Kareem saw the man keep the shotgun ready, clenching it in both hands.
Now I'll burn him up!
Baker still held firm. He looked at Jamal, who stood frozen with Kareem's gun jammed to the side of his head.
Toss it, Neil. This motherfucker go crazy, you don't do what he said.
Better listen to him, boy.
Baker turned slightly and pitched the shotgun down onto one of the room's sagging double beds.
When did you start ripping dope, big boy?
Shut up.
With the big 10mm still against Jamal's head, Kareem studied the closed door to the bathroom for a moment.
Benny, don't even think about it in there. I'll bust Jamal's head wide open.
Come on out, Benny. They got over on us this time.
If he told you Marty A.M. is going to give you a sweet roll for this, he's lying.
He nodded towards Sonny, who stood ready to fire the AK at any second. Kareem nudged the tip of the gun barrel against the side of his head.
I got my own sweet roll. I'm not working for Marty A.M.
The door to the bathroom opened. A young Asian American, Benny Wu, stepped out, one hand in the air, the other holding up his unbuttoned trousers.
Then who are you working for? You ain't just stepping out on your own robbing dealers.
Why not? You boys doing pretty good at it.
He's working for me.
Augie shoved the sunglasses up, revealing his face.
That was my cash you ripped off.
The Canadian cracker?
Jamal gave a slight shrug and looked at Kareem.
It's all in the shower. Benny watching about it.
He gestured at the open bathroom door. Benny Wu stood staring, holding his baggy pants up at the waist. Augie stood a step forward, getting curious.
How'd you know I'm Canadian?
Shit. Didn't you tell him how things work down here, big boy?
We're all through catching up, Jamal.
Kareem gave the thin man a shove toward the bathroom door. The others watched Kareem guide him through the door, then back into the room a moment later. Jamal carried an Adidas bag against his chest and pitched it down on the bed beside Baker's shotgun. Sonny and DeCampo held the AK and the short rifle aimed and ready, watching Baker and glancing at Augie as he spread the bag open on the bed and rummaged through it.
Well, how do we look?
Sonny saw the angry glare on Augie's face.
Not so good.
Augie held up a quarter bag of blow, two short stacks of cash. He let some loose bills fall from his hand.
Where's the rest of it?
Jamal managed a sly little grin. Instead of addressing Augie, he looked at Kareem.
Don't this fool know I got expenses? Help a nigga out! Tell him how this works!
Look at me, Jamal.
Look at you for what, motherfucker?
Augie's bursa nailed Jamal twice in the chest, a third time through his right eye. Blood misted. Fragments of brain matter splattered the wall. Sonny saw Baker ready to make a move for the shotgun on the bed. He braced the AK to his shoulder and pulled back on the trigger for a full auto spray of bullets. DeCampo fired the short rifle. The shot flung Baker over the bed onto the floor, his hands squeezing the bullet hole in his side.
Oh, man.
Kareem turned his 10mm to Benny Wu as Benny reached for something behind his back.
Don't do it, Benny. You're coming with us.
Benny Wu's hands raised in front of him. Kareem stepped over to him, turned around, and jerked a large revolver from the back of his waist.
You gave me this fucking thing unloaded? A fucking unloaded gun?
My bad. I forgot.
Kareem turned his 10mm towards Sonny. Sonny saw Augeo's Bursa 9mm also aimed at him. He looked back and forth between them, red-eyed and enraged, half-stalled on all the coke, reefer, and beer he'd ingested.
Come on, get the stuff, Sonny.
Augeo waited until he saw Sonny lower the empty rifle and start gathering the money and dope into the gym bag. Then he stepped around between the two beds and stared down at Neil Baker, who lay silent, writhing in pain.
Look at you. Bet you wanted us to forget you're here, huh?
He held the Bursa aimed down at Baker's sweaty, grimacing face.
Don't shoot me! I won't say nothing! I swear!
Well, okay then.
But he fired two bullets into Baker's face anyway. Then he stepped back, giving Sonny and DeCampo a strange, bemused look.
Let's go, Benny.
Shoving Wu along in front of him, Kareem led the others out of the biting odor of carbide toward the parked Taurus.
Whoa, look at this.
Augeo gestured the Bursa toward the silver-gray Buick backed off the street into a weed-grown alleyway facing the motel. Kareem opened the Taurus's rear door. Benny Wu sat down into the back seat.
Stay cool, Benny Wu.
Wu only nodded up at him. Kareem grabbed DeCampo's arm as DeCampo started to slide in the back seat on one side of Wu, Sonny sliding in on the other side.
Make sure you cowpokes don't shoot him, hear me?
DeCampo nodded, and Kareem turned him loose.
What about this guy?
Augeo stared hard across the dark street at the Buick.
He's not the law, or he'd already be lighting us up.
He stared at the Buick, seeing only a darkened silhouette on the driver's side.
I don't like leaving a witness here.
The Bursa hung in Augeo's hand.
Shoot him then.
Augeo stepped forward, raising the gun out at arm's length.
No, man!
Kareem grabbed the back of his shirt just in time.
I'm fucking with you. Get in the car, let's go. He follows us, we will kill it.
He looked toward the Buick and saw it back up fast, spinning sand, its lights off. The two hurried into the front seat of the Taurus as the Buick turned a half circle out of the sandy lot and sped away in the night. Ray Dillon had gone to bed late, yet before dawn he'd gotten up, dressed, and sat at his kitchen counter, sipping his second cup of black coffee. Last night, as the blare of sirens finally resounded in the distance, he'd made his way back from Hudson Beach using several back roads and side streets into Spring Hill. He'd kept an eye on the road behind him, made a few unneeded turns to make sure he wasn't being followed before turning into his driveway and pulling the Buick into the garage for the night. Safe enough. But he decided to get the Buick farther out of sight before sunup. He also wanted to pick up another vehicle for himself, one that last night's dopers wouldn't recognize. This whole situation was dangerous enough, he knew he'd have to go to Sammy and tell her what he'd seen. He wasn't going to put it off any longer. If she didn't like the fact that he'd followed them, spied on them on her behalf, so be it. It had to be done. Finishing his coffee, he turned off the coffee maker, picked up his keys in the .45 semi-automatic he'd brought in from the car last night. He'd cleaned, oiled, and inspected the big gun on a cloth spread on the kitchen table. He kept the big, powerful street gun in the console for emergencies over the years, hoping he would never again have need for it. Looking down at the semi-automatic, hefting it on his palm, he slipped it into its slim leather holster on its way out the kitchen door into the garage. He found something strangely reminiscent about the weight and the feel of the big gun, memories of the bad old days. Before getting into the Buick, he pushed the garage door button on the wall and stood in the shadows, gun in hand. He walked to the edge of the open door and looked back and forth into the grainy morning darkness. Then he walked back and got in the Buick. Gun at his side, he backed the car out onto the empty street and drove it half a block before turning on the headlights. He was sharply aware that every precaution he'd just taken for his safety would have meant nothing if some seasoned shooter like himself followed him home and had been waiting here to kill him. As he drove, his thoughts traveled back to a time on a gray, early morning like this when he'd stood on the outside of a large suburban home, waiting as a garage door rolled upward in its track. That day, he'd waited crouched between the house's brick front wall and an ornamental evergreen slightly taller than himself. When the door finished opening, a Lincoln Town Car backed out slow and easy, the man inside watching the driveway behind him in the rearview mirror. Dillon stood so close to the side of the backing car, he'd only had to raise the gun up from his side, arm's length. He pulled the trigger with the tip of the silencer only inches from the closed window. Four 38 special shots spat out the end of a 6-inch silencer, making noise, but nothing like the noise of high grain bullets, more like an anemic weed trimmer backfiring. The side glass had cobwebbed on that first shot. The next three shots had blown out much of the clinging safety glass and exposed the man's fatal head wounds. Unscrewing the silencer from the threaded gun barrel, Dylan watched the car continue to roll backwards on its own as if in slow motion. A few feet down the driveway, the car crept over against a short creek rock wall and died there. The man fell over in his seat. Dylan slipped the gun into his right coat pocket, the silencer into his left, and walked away in the gray morning gloom. And that was that. Must have been 20, 25 years ago, he told himself. He put the memory away and drove south along Commercial Way to a sprawling storage complex where he kept two 20-by-30-foot storage units leased under another name. His units stood back-to-back with a heavy metal fold-up door dividing them. Dylan kept the center divider raised, creating a 60-foot stretch of garage and storage with a wide drive-through door on either end. It worked out perfect for him. The double unit housed a plain white Windstar van facing what had become the rear overhead door. Dylan kept the van clean and serviced, ready to drive anywhere, anytime, if called upon. Now that the Buick had been spotted in last night's shooting, it was a good time to switch rides, get the Buick out of sight for a while. He tossed a glance behind the van where a vintage Porsche 911 project car sat shrouded beneath a soft tan car cover.
Someday.
Stepping out of the Buick, he shoved the .45 behind his belt and walked to a wide metal tool cabinet standing beside a workbench against the wall. A key stuck in the lock on the cabinet's left double door, but it only hung there for show. To open the cabinet, Dylan clicked on a small TV sitting on the workbench. As the screen lit up, electricity from the TV cord sent power to a switch hidden beneath the bench top. He reached under the bench, pressed the switch, and the cabinet doors unlocked. Using both hands, he pulled the false insides of the cabinet open from the middle. Shelving, power tools, and all swung aside, revealing a secretive row of select weaponry and ammunition, tools of the trade he'd acquired for himself over the years. Nothing he needed right now, he reminded himself. Hopefully nothing he would need again, period. But his inventory was here if he needed it. A long-range sniper rifle, a pump shotgun, a Colt M2, all standing in a row like old friends waiting to make his issues their own. On the cabinet's back wall, above the rifles and shotgun, a row of both revolver and semi-automatic pistols hung on S-hooks by their trigger guards. Shelves on either side held an assortment of ammunition boxes, stacks of loaded 30-round clips for the M2. Dylan took a cheap pocket-sized .22 caliber toss-away revolver from its peg, a gun he'd customized for himself, removing any bothersome serial number. With it, he picked up a stubby black pill bottle silencer of his own creation from its place on a shelf. He took out low-grain ammunition for the .22 and loaded it. Then he shut the inside compartment and closed the cabinet's metal doors. He turned to the TV on the workbench and saw a young news reporter standing out front of the Gulf Breeze Motel. In the background, he saw yellow plastic tape strung the length of the parking lot.
We've learned that two bodies were found in what Pasco County and Florida State Police consider may have been a drug-related incident.
Dylan clicked off the TV, picked up the guns, silencer, and ammo, and walked to the Windstar. Inside the van, he opened the console lid and raised a false bottom and laid the .45 and the silencer and extra ammo for the .22 down under it. He shoved the loaded .22 revolver down into his right pocket. Closing the false bottom, he laid a Florida map inside the console and shut the lid. All done, he clicked open the rear overhead door, drove out, and clicked the door down behind him. The sun was well on the rise now and mantling a clear blue Florida sky. Palms swayed on a mild eastwardly breeze. Looking at the anonymous storage units lined row upon row in his rearview mirror, Dylan had a feeling he'd be coming back soon. Sunlight glistened on the calmly lapping water of the canal and the endless gulf it widened into. Overhead, the squawk and chatter of looping seagulls resounded on the warming breeze. On a dock post, a pelican stood with its wings spread, drying in the sun after its morning feed. On her way from the screened pool enclosure to an unfinished guest building in the rear corner of her yard, Sammy Bloom returned a wave from two neighbors cruising along the canal behind her house on a small canopy-covered pontoon. The small craft idled and bobbed along easily on the last few yards of restricted no-wake zone. Sammy carried an empty black travel bag under her arm. Inside the empty stucco guest house, she turned on the light and pulled down a set of wooden folding stairs that reached up into the attic. Climbing the steps, she immediately felt the gravity of stale, heated air close around her. Sweat beaded on her forehead. She pulled on a light chain and walked stoop-shouldered beneath the slant of the roof and its cross-framing to a stack of boxes, which she scooted aside to reveal a stacked wall of barrack-style footlockers. She took down a locker from atop the stack, opened it on the floor, and stooped down in front of it. Working quick, she unsnapped the front latches on the footlocker and raised the lid. Neat stacks of U.S. dollar bills stared up at her. As always, the sight of so much money in one place took her aback for a moment.
Whew.
But she wiped a hand across her forehead, opened the travel bag lying at her knees, and went to work. Keeping a tight count of the $10,000 stacks of cash, she passed one hand to the other and into the bag. She didn't hear the white van pull into her driveway and stop. She didn't hear its door open and close. Out on the front porch, Dylan rang the bell a third time as he looked around the street, the rows of plush green front yards on either side. He knew Sammy was a morning walker, but usually it was earlier than this. What then? The pool?
All right.
He walked down from the porch and around the corner of the house. As he started back toward the pool area, he noticed the door to the outbuilding standing ajar. His senses went on higher alert. He glanced all around as he walked to the partly opened door and pushed it open a little more. He looked into the shadowy building and stepped inside, his right hand going down into his pocket to the 9mm. Having never been inside the building before, at times sensing that Sammy didn't want him in here, Dylan looked around for anything out of place, not knowing exactly what out of place looked like. He eyed a stack of folding chairs, a restored Cushman Eagle motor scooter sitting under a canvas cover, folding stairs that stretched from the attic to the floor. He looked up the stairs at a dim light glowing in the shadowy darkness.
Sam?
He stopped short of calling Sammy's name when the travel bag sailed out of the overhead space and landed on the concrete near his feet. His hand clenched instinctively around the pocket gun.
Sammy, are you up there? Sammy, it's Ray. Are you up there?
Oh, Ray? I wasn't expecting you, was I?
She hurried to the locker. Looking down at all the money still left inside, she shut the lid, latched the top, and hefted the locker back in place. She started stacking the boxes back in front of the lockers.
Are you all right?
Dylan moved over and looked up the stairs, seeing only the dim light.
I'm fine, Ray. I'll be right down.
She hurried, grabbing the boxes one after the other and restacking them.
Are you having sex up there?
Yes, of course I am. What else would I be doing up here?
Would you like my help?
Thank you. No, I'm doing fine on my own. It's terribly hot up here.
Well, then come down.
As he spoke, he looked at the travel bag near his feet, an uncoupled zipper having spread open upon landing on the concrete floor. He saw the rows of money inside. One stack had flipped up and stuck halfway out through the open zipper. Dylan stooped down and looked closer as he heard Sammy's footsteps coming closer to the ladder. He shoved the exposed stack of money back down into the bag and pressed the top closed just in time. Sammy reached a leg down into sight and descended the steps.
Ray, you startled me.
Ray took her hand as she stepped off the stairs onto the floor.
Oh, look at me. I'm soaking wet and I was only up there for a few minutes.
She looked at the travel bag, stooped and zipped it shut. She stood up, picking the bag up with her.
Here, let me get that for you.
Thanks, I've got it. Anyway, it's got wheels if I need them, see?
Looks heavy.
What brings you by this morning, Ray?
She turned to the open door. He stepped out the door behind her, watched her lock it, and followed her up the walk to the lanai. He'd already decided to wait a few minutes before bringing up what he'd seen last night, how he'd first seen two of the men involved leaving her house. Seeing the money in the bag was raising a red flag. Time to reevaluate.
Thought we might go for breakfast.
He stepped in front and opened the lanai door for her.
Breakfast?
She stepped inside the lanai and sat the bag down on the white wicker table.
I'm afraid I wouldn't be very good company today.
Next time I'll call first. I promise. It wasn't a good idea dropping by.
Forget it. That's okay, Ray. Actually, I'm glad you're here.
She stepped just inside the house to a coffee maker on the kitchen counter, took down two cups and began filling them instinctively.
I'm in a mess. I don't know how I'll ever get out of it.
Oh?
Dylan saw the distress in her eyes.
Here, Sammy, let me take those. Sit down.
As he spoke, he ushered her to the table and pulled out a chair for her.
You know you can talk to me, if you think it might help.
She studied his eyes for a moment, as if considering his offer. Then she appeared to make up her mind.
Yes, Ray. I certainly do need to talk to someone.
She watched as Dylan pulled a chair out for himself, scooted it over closer to her, and sat down. He wasn't going to mention what he'd witnessed last night, not until he first heard what she had to say. He had a feeling this would all connect at some point. The shootout at the Gulf Breeze, the money in the travel bag. For now, though, this seemed like a good time to keep quiet and listen.